This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, welcome to the Create Unknown, the home of Make Something Mean Something. I am Kevin Lieber, and with me, as always, is Matthew Tabor.
We've been making things and meaning things. It's been good. It's not just been us. As I mentioned in the last show, NRM was on track to partner and cleared that hurdle. So that was good. That actually happened. You know, the biggest fear is you're like, oh, this person is on the precipice of something amazing. And then the algorithm like stalls out and ruins their life.
Yeah. And we have been making lots of things behind the scenes. That's why our recording schedule is very wonky. So, you know, apologies for that. You know, the pipeline. Yeah. The pipeline is a little clogged and then unclogged, clogged once more. But we are doing our best to hop on when we can, and hopefully you will enjoy plucking the fruits of our labor about a month from now or so.
That's what I was going to ask you, is what date are you comfortable saying we will do the big reveal by? And I think a month is safe, isn't it? Better be a month.
Yeah. It certainly better be a month. That's for sure. And that's kind of all we'll say for now. But
if it's not, something has gone quite badly wrong and we're in trouble.
Yes. If you don't want us to be in trouble, then mark your calendar. But
they do want us to be in trouble.
That's not
all
nice.
All of them do.
That's not nice.
10 minutes in the Discord and you'll know that they're all out to get us.
It's very evil of them. Make something mean, as in being mean something. Something popped in my, and this was very, very random. I don't know why this happens, but sometimes something just floats up from your subconscious and sticks in your brain for no reason. And that happened to me recently when I recalled an episode of Intervention that I saw many years ago. And if anybody hasn't watched that, the premise of Intervention is pretty simple, and it's all in the title. There is someone who is an addict. It doesn't matter really what they're addicted to, some sort of substance abuse problem, you know, alcohol, meth,
Final Fantasy VII,
heroin, Final Fantasy VII, orthopedic underwear, you know, they could be addicted to anything. They could be addicted to anything. And then, the family, the loved ones stage an intervention with the hope of getting them to go to rehab to get better. And what I'm about to say really has almost nothing to do with that. I mean, it does, but it really doesn't.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So that's a good preface. What it has to do with, though, are the circumstances around this episode are fascinating to me. And I brought this up to you recently because, it was something I was thinking about talking to you about on the podcast, and you had some thoughts of your own about it. So here's what...
Yeah, you'll have to tell me again because I don't listen when you say those things.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, so it'll be fresh for you as well as the audience.
The teacher and Charlie Brown.
Wah, wah, wah.
It's like, oh, let's talk about this video. Wah, wah, wah. I'm browsing eBay.
Trumpet noises. So the circumstances around this person who became an addict and really needed help, you know, they give you the backstory to all of these people to let you know sort of, you know, if there were things that led them to becoming some sort of trauma, that sort of thing. In this episode, it really centered around a patriarch, a grandfather or a father, really. I think perhaps it was the father, and then there were grandkids involved too. But the point is, There was this one guy, okay? This grandpa, this old guy that was amazing. He started and operated this business. He was really good at it. He was very successful at it. He folded his kids into the business and everybody was thriving. This was a wealthy family. You know, everybody was well off. They were, you know, I think if I recall, they were kind of like country clubbing, like level of just affluent, everyone
comfortable. Yeah.
Everyone's happy. They are, you know, the American dream embodied, this family, and everything is going really, really well for all of them. They're all doing great. The patriarch, the grandpa, the guy who started the business, dies of natural causes. He passes away. He's an old man. And after that moment, without him being like the keystone linchpin of the family, it all crumbles. Everyone turns into a disaster. The business fails. Like everything bad you can possibly imagine happens once this one guy is no longer around. To just, I don't know. I mean, that's kind of where I want to start with you, is like, this is a thing, right? And this is why I thought it was interesting to talk about, because it's not a story that I see, at least in this scenario, in these circumstances, told very often, as far as like movies and TV. But it's a thing that I think everyone either has a direct relationship to in some manner, or like knows a family that's like this to some degree. If it really could take just one person dying for like everyone around that person to fall apart.
This is a thing, first of all, and it's a thing in a thousand different ways, and a lot of them seem frivolous to the point where we make fun of them, but they're actually quite real. So the two spectrums that you have here, I think, is one, that family type thing where, you know, you're talking about this situation. There are actually two big, distinct sort of purposes of parents, right? And I'm looking through the chat and see we got a few of them in there. Not everybody is a total incel. One is you make good people, right? You have children and then you make them decent. The other is when you make people who succeed you, people who you pass the torch to in a way that preserves everything you're talking about crumbling. They're two really distinct tasks, and they're both very hard in their own ways. But, you know, first and foremost, somebody's got to be solid. You have these, the good family that you talked about, and everybody's happy and doing their thing. That's hard enough. Then having a plan for the succession is not many people have time to do that. You know, so this is obviously a super critical life thing, but this same force is at work with really goofy things. So, for example, when a really popular TV show ends, you get these maudlin, over-the-top tweets where, you know, somebody's meaning in life is now gone because The Walking Dead has aired its last episode. you make fun of that person for being a boner, but it's really the same kind of thing where it's like, okay, this played a role in my life. And now that thing is gone and I don't quite know what to do. I don't know if there's an easy way to fill the vacuum. I don't know if what I do is going to bring me as much joy. If it doesn't, then I'm stressed that I have lost the joy in my life. This is the struggle with sports stuff. And I felt that where I really enjoyed bowling a lot. And I was at a point where I physically couldn't do it in a way that made me happy. And, you know, it's like, all right, well, what's going to replace that, if anything? I didn't know. And it sucks. You know, the athletes retire and it's like, okay, now that I'm not playing, what do I do? So you're losing this keystone thing, like you mentioned, that holds everything else together. And when it gets pulled out, whether it's, a grandfather or grandmother, or it's, a hobby, this stuff can spiral out of control.
Yeah. Or a job, losing a job, right? Sure. That of course makes sense. But with the person thing, that's what I thought was so unique about this. And, not unique. What's unique to me about it is that it just doesn't seem like the tale is told often in that order in movies and stuff, which you'd think if it was something that was such a human universal, we would be kind of inundated with relatable tales about this scenario. You know, the only two I could come up with that are kind of like this, but really not. So I'm going to say that they're not like this are The Godfather and Succession. So The Godfather,
they're both pretty good.
They're kind of about this, but also not.
They are.
So So in The Godfather, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen that, that's the Godfather dies. And then the whole rest of the movie and the sequels are about, who replaces him. Who becomes the new Godfather, and he's got a few kids who are different candidates, and, some make better replacements than others and whatever. The one who doesn't want to do it ends up doing it and ends up becoming a tyrant. That's The Godfather. And then Succession, that whole TV show is about who's going to succeed the old man, who's sick and going to die and running his, media empire. And he's got a few kids and he's got a few candidates, and the whole show is about which one of these kids are, going to win, who's going to win this, the big dad, the big guy's chair at the end of the show. But what I'm talking about, it doesn't really seem to happen, in movies, which is, kind of like, so the reason that though, I don't think those two shows are examples of what I'm talking about is the Succession kids seem to be doing fine. Even, afterwards, they'll be okay. They don't turn into total messes. I mean, we don't exactly know what happens to all of them by the end of the show. Maybe one of them does, but the show's not about that, right? It's not about, what's his name? Logan or something? Logan Roy, I think his name.
Oh, Logan Roy. Yeah.
It's not like he dies in season one and then the rest of the seasons, are about everyone around him crumbling to pieces. Right?
Right.
That's not the show. And there is, unless I'm really misremembering or not remembering some show, is there anything that's like that?
I came up with one, which is Soul Food, which is a fairly obscure movie that I saw on TV once. But I distinctly remember it because of what you're talking about, which I've seen in, I've seen it in real life with people. And I remember watching it and thinking, this is exactly, this matches the reality that I know. But again, it wasn't hyper popular. Those shows you mentioned that are, they are not specifically about this, but they are about the buildup to it. And that only works because people recognize what's about to happen here. Occasionally a show like The Godfather did a couple movies to show what happens in the wake of this, how it actually worked out. I don't know if there's going to be a Succession spinoff, but you know that there's a prospect of all these people spinning off the rails and destroying whatever the person who's gone has built, whether it's family cohesion or whether it's a business empire, legal in the case of Logan Roy and less legal in the Corleone case. But one of the best parts of the Godfather series is seeing one son, Michael, step up and struggle with that. And then another son, Fredo, just be a loser to the point where it significantly affects his family. It's tragic in that sense. But this is old stuff. And I'm glad that Jen says in the chat that this is, this is Hamlet. This is Hamlet. Hamlet's dad is killed, and then everything goes off the rails. That resonated with people because they know it happens this way. This is a major running theme in Roman history. I mean, centuries. After Caesar, after Augustus, things start to, they start to decline a little bit. And then all of a sudden, it gets insane. And I mean insane to the point where there are periods in Roman history where there are like 7-8 emperors in one calendar year, because they're all so garbage that they either are immediately replaced or quite often killed. It's always been this way. You know, I think it's been a question since, you know, what happens when, you know, Grog, who's the most powerful saber-toothed tiger clubbing warrior in the tribe, dies, then what happens? You know, I don't think that there's a worry about that at the time in advance of the thing happening, but now we do worry about it. Now we have the capacity to recognize how, not just how things are, but how things could be. And there's always the grim version of how it could be. What I really like about this topic is that it applies to kind of every scenario, and quite often in hidden ways. It's really obvious when you have the old person who is leading the family, you know, where you have the CEO running, you know, Roy Industries, whatever the hell it was. That's clean and obvious. What if it's something or someone that isn't easy to measure, that nobody even realizes is the linchpin to the whole thing? And if they don't realize, that means you may have some of these people in your life who play this role and you don't even recognize it. You may recognize it when they're gone, but you may not. And something might get worse and you don't even know why. You will probably blame yourself. But the reality here is that this thing all of a sudden is missing, and it disrupts you, if it's in the case of that single one person thing, or a collection of people. I don't know what you've been sipping, but you've got it all wrong. It's time to commit to the Leaf. We've embraced the smoothness and surprising pick-me-up that tea provides. I literally drink it all day long, nearly a gallon a day, and it powers me through research, script writing, and forums on websites that I refuse to name here. But we don't drink normie NPC tea. We drink cultured and refined anime tea from the Dragon's Treasure. Kevin still likes the gunpowder green called Space Cowboy, and I've sampled nearly 40 Dragon's Treasure teas at this point. Lately, I've been slamming black teas like Kentucky Bourbon and liquefied Berserk Despair. Scottish Breakfast is deep and peaty, and I smooth it over with Sebastian's Morning Earl Grey, which has the best vanilla cream taste I think I've ever had in a cup. Give me a pot of that with a hot meatball sub from Sal's Pizza and Brooks Barbecue Chicken to wash down my last meal on death row. I highly recommend the sampler packs. You'll want to try everything just like I did. I literally have not had one tea that I wouldn't be happy to reorder. The Dragon's Wings membership fuels new tea experimentation, and the Tea of the Month Club provides a regularly scheduled surprise. And when you order from the Dragon's Treasure using code CREATE, you'll get 10% off your order. That's 10% off using the code CREATE at thedragonstreasure.com. The link's in the description.
Yeah, so when I was thinking about it in terms of, I don't know, what I find missing about the recognition of this is, like, obviously there's the hero's journey. Everyone knows those stories where it's like, oh, it's Luke Skywalker and he becomes this Jedi Master, and like there's like that. So like we recognize it that way, right? Obviously, we all know that story. And I think that when it comes to the opposite of this, like the dark side of it, I guess, to stay on Star Wars, I think everyone obviously believes the fact that one person can do a lot of harm, right? You see this all day long, whether, you know, no matter who it is, it's like this one person is so bad for the world and doing tons and tons of harm. But I don't see that much on the other side of it, though, where it's like, wow, like this one person is really doing like a lot of good. And I just think it's taken for granted in a way that when we see someone doing bad, everyone like recognizes it and points to it. Mm-hmm. When we see someone doing good, it is really easy for that to be invisible until, like you said, they're gone and everything turns to garbage. It's like, what happened?
Yes.
It's like, oh, yeah, that person was like lifting up all of this other stuff. And yeah, we didn't appreciate it.
Yeah. It's so hard to define because it's different in so many cases. And sometimes you know it explicitly, and most of the time you don't. I do think that a lot of people realize this with things like losing parents and grandparents because they don't understand how important that person was to them until, you know, little things come up that aren't there anymore. I was actually talking to my mom about this the other day in slightly different terms, but her father was somebody who could fix absolutely anything. I mean, insane level of DIYer. And well, you don't fully appreciate that until you don't have somebody to call to fix your sink. And then you don't have somebody to call to diagnose this problem. You know that your driveway is cracking, but you don't know what the issue is. And this starts to pile up. And then, 5 years later, you realize what it adds up to. It's hard to have the perspective on that. And again, it's so clear when it's that business kind of setting, because you can see like quantitative measures of the operation being affected. This thing takes a lot longer now. This thing got more expensive. People are quitting at a higher thing. Well, when it's something like the intervention example, you don't know at all what the common thread is or what the impetus for a thing is. You know, somebody goes down a bad path. Well, people just do that anyway. And that can be, it almost always is, a result of something that's happening exclusively to them. And then, well, it happens to another one. You know, did that happen in part because the first one went off the rails and that affected them? You know, it's like this starts to happen 7-8 times and years later, everybody's a mess. Then maybe you're able to look and say, okay, all of this started at this particular point in time. And then you can begin to have a hope of untangling it. But only then do you realize the importance of the whole thing. You take everything for granted until that point. This is as simple as, I hear this with people lamenting that their favorite, you know, YouTube people don't do this stuff anymore. You take that for granted at the time. You never quite know how it's going to change or how much you enjoyed a thing. Most of the people who I really enjoyed on YouTube are not there anymore. A really good example is Psychic Pebbles. He's one of the funniest people I have ever encountered and ever will. And he's doing something else now. And it kind of didn't occur to me until he moved on to bigger and better things that meant, oh, okay, no more, you know, get out of my car animations. It's like, oh, I miss those, whatever. And you can go to something like old episodes of Sleepy Cabin and people are still watching it and commenting and saying, you know, this is my 38th time listening because I just need this. So it can happen in those soft ways, but you don't know until you're deep into the thing. Taylor says, it's funny, Taylor, who's the appended name is Zoomer 15. This gives you a sense of perspective, says, you know, sorry, you've all got to go through this. Well, let me tell you, Taylor, unfortunately, you will be us at some point, whether you lose, you lose your animators on YouTube or you, you know, have some life thing change. But this truly is an every person problem. It just is. You can be a hermit who lives on a mountaintop and you're there for a reason. Well, at a certain point, if you begin to wonder if that reason is strong enough, if it's worth the life you have, you're losing something and you just questioning that will significantly alter how you feel during the day. So like literally it's impossible to be immune from this. The best you can hope for is that you don't have to deal with it for a long time.
So the flip side of the whole thing, and really the reason that I was thinking about it more and more is not what we've been talking about. We've been talking about sort of the terrible fallout and after effects of what happens to everybody. But before that, okay, so before that, it is an astonishing thing to recognize and think about just how much of a positive effect one person can have around everybody that they know. The amount of like boundless positivity that you can put into the world just as one person is kind of scary, shocking, and inspiring, I think, all at the same time. You know, it does, in a lot of ways, like I said, it goes unrecognized mostly, which isn't like awesome, but at the same time, it's recognized in ways in which really you and everyone around you are better off and are doing well and are, you know, like flourishing just because one person is sort of kind of dragging everybody else, you know, up the mountain. I don't really think, do you know what I mean? Does that make any sense?
It does. You're either fulfilling a responsibility for them or they're getting something out of them. You know, and I think the like the most accessible example of this is thinking of a really good teacher, you know, being influential on a lot of people's lives. I didn't have many of those until I was older, but I know that, you know, it's like when I sign up for a thing that has security questions and it's like, what's your favorite teacher from high school? And I'm just like, okay, X that out. I'm not even gonna play this game. But no, I mean, that's a really clear example where it's like, you can realize down the line how important in a positive way that person was for you. When you mentioned this topic, I thought there's a corollary to everything we talked about last week. And to catch anybody up on that, Kevin had a theory that is 100% accurate, that this quarterback for the 49ers, Brock Purdy, is massively underappreciated. And people are actively saying he stinks despite irrefutable evidence that he doesn't. Well, he is outstanding. He's one of the best. There's no question about that. And every metric points to it. What's interesting here and how it relates to this topic is that nobody knew, absolutely nobody knew. And when you think about the scale of nobody knowing, it gets pretty crazy. He did not go to an absolutely top tier college. He wasn't recruited by the top 10 teams in the country. He was drafted literally last, which means, what is it, 32 teams at this point, or is it 30?
Yeah, I think it was pick 262 or something like that.
Yeah. Every one of these teams who have a dedicated staff identifying talent and deciding how to choose that talent, then dedicating many millions of dollars over all of their draft picks to the acquisition and development of that talent, building organizations around it. There's a tremendous amount of thought and analysis that goes into this. But then the 49ers draft this guy and they don't recognize his talent. He's third on the depth chart. He's behind a number two that they did significantly sacrifice the future to trade up for. They put shocking resources into a guy who they thought was going to be great. They put nothing into Brock Purdy. They were completely and totally wrong about all of it. And the only reason they ever found out was because of a series of injuries that made it so he had to play. There was no other option. You have these people who are at the best in the world at identifying and cultivating talent, which is why they work at the NFL level. They have more resources than anybody can fathom. And for years and years and years, nobody involved in this process at all had any inkling of this man's talent. When you talk about people doing good or not being appreciated as being an important person. Think how often that is you. And I mean you as anybody listening. Think of all the opportunities that could be you, where you can fulfill the roles that Kevin's talking about and have the impacts that he's talking about. But right now, there's no indication. There's no indication that you would. There's no indication that anybody values you to that degree. This stuff happens in secret all the time. I wonder if I actually doubt that Brock Purdy himself had any sense of how good he was. I don't think he himself knew until he was put on a stage where he could execute it at a level that he was probably much higher at than even he himself projected. You know, this weaves in to some themes that we've mentioned and you know, one that I will continue to mention through the year, which is you have to do things. You have to just plain do things, because that tends to be where you discover what you really know, what you do, what other people value, what impacts you can have. Because in this case of Brock Purdy, the man himself didn't know. No one responsible for him knew. No one knew. There's not a person alive. And anybody who says they are is lying.
And people still act like they don't know. They still think that he still has haters and people who think that he sucks even while he's achieving, you know, record level of playing success. But I want to go back a second to the hero's journey thing, because, you know, we all watch these movies and we read these books and we play these video games where there's this chosen one who emerges from obscurity to save the world, you know, after going through a series of challenges, experiencing loss, sacrificing themselves, whatever it is. And at the end, they save the world. And we love that story. It's everywhere. It's all that we pay attention to. And I always think to myself, well, what does that mean? You know, if you take that story literally, it's ridiculous and it's impossible. There are no real dragons to slay. There is no evil queen that you have to topple. None of that is real. What is real, though, is a story like this, you know, patriarch from Intervention, or the matriarch in Soul Food, who lives a certain way that just makes everyone else's lives, including their own, way better. That's a real hero's journey story. That is saving the world. Because what is the world other than you and the people around you? If you're saving yourself and the people around you, you're saving the world, right?
Yes. The world can be just you. It can be just you and your cat. It can be you and your brother and your mom. The world is actually not very big. It doesn't have to be. You can have a tremendous effect on what seems like an insignificant number of people. But you have to remember that the whole world is really just a big combination of all those individual people. That's how it works. None really any more or less important than the other. If you are this person for two people, are you only 1/10 as good as a person who is that person for 20 people? No, that's dumb. The math doesn't work that way. What matters is that you've done this for two people, and that is remarkable. That is a remarkable thing, you know, and this is what the intervention scenarios show, where it's like this one person was holding together 10 or 12 people, and who knows how their lives are constructed. You know, they have friends and boyfriends and girlfriends and coworkers, and like this stuff expands. This circle of one gets gigantic. Very, very, very quickly. It turns into thousands for every person in the world. Sometimes it's direct in a human to human way. It can be weirdly indirect. Okay, you're a disaster with your health. You have preventable, 100% preventable health issues. You don't take care of them. Congratulations, you've made health insurance that much more expensive for all of the other people in your plan subscriber pool. Yeah, nobody is getting the bill for health insurance each month and shaking their fist that, you know, John across town made their bill go up by 12 cents. That doesn't happen in a rational way, but that's what actually happens. that's the way it actually works. So it can be those meaningful, emotional, in-person ways. It can be a measurable thing, like how efficient, how many yards you gain on the average throw. Or it can be a really distant, impersonal thing that ends up affecting thousands or sometimes millions of people.
Dan the Latch says, isn't this just It's a Wonderful Life, which is a movie that I know about, but I don't think I've ever actually sat through. So in that movie, I know that the premise is that this guy is shown like what the people around him's life would be like when he's not around. Isn't that right? Is the guy going to kill himself? And then like an angel comes and says like, you shouldn't do that because look at what will happen. Is that what happens? So is that exactly the movie that I'm saying that I've been saying doesn't exist that explains this entire process acutely?
Dan says it's the last 30 minutes of the movie. Okay. And the implications of you know, Ebenezer Scrooge's bad actions, he gets to see, you know, how things played out and how they are and how they will be. And that's a message to not be a bad guy. You know, Richter says there are many variations of that story. And yeah, now that we're pulling on that thread, I think there are a lot of very positive and very negative versions of that story. It touches on the whole spectrum. I don't think we get a lot of them now.
I was going to say, those are such old examples. It's a Wonderful Life was like, when did they make that? In the 40s?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't remember if I saw it at the talkies. When Pop gave me a nickel and dropped me out of the Model T.
1946. I was right. The 40s. Yeah, man.
Hey, I'm Rory.
And I'm Maul.
And we're the hosts of the new Rory and Maul podcast.
That's right.
I know you're probably listening to a podcast that you actually like right now, and we just interrupted it with an ad.
That's all right, we're here.
And I appreciate if you didn't hit the 15-second skip button.
Listen to our show where we cover topics like music, movies,
yes,
TV shows, which we love to binge watch.
Of course, just lifestyle stuff.
And give off crazy stories about our day-to-day lives.
Yeah.
Check us out on the new Rory Maul podcast. Listen to wherever you get your podcast and let us know how you're feeling about our show.
And once you're done listening to this podcast that you actually like, maybe you could check us out.
Yeah, Jen says it's old fashioned. It is, you know, I think people feel like they need to be past those types of foundational stories. I feel the opposite way. I feel like you always tell those stories. You do them differently as all. Because those are the real stories. Those are the real stories. You know, so, you know, I mentioned, you know, we talked about the parent type stuff. And I mentioned these two tasks that, you know, you make little versions of people who are a blend of yourself and the individual that they are. And then you also have a thing that's carried down, ideally, if you have something worth carrying down. Some people truly want their next generation to be, you know, significantly different. But, you know, I see that, you know, I've seen that play out over the last year where I don't have that, you know, I've lost my parent and now I'm going off the rails situation because, you know, I have lost one parent now and I was equipped with everything that parent could give me. So, you know, my dad is not physically there anymore and there's things that can't be replaced. You know, I'm never going to walk into that house and see him. And so, you know, that there's no way around that. But all the values and all of that are 100% there. I see when that has happened to some other people and that transfer of values and all of that never happened. And now they are on their own and ill-equipped. It's brutal. It's really brutal. You know, and it's, I think you can generalize what that situation is to the slightest little thing. And here's an example. I was grocery shopping, which for me once a month entails buying 6 gallons of almond milk, 9 dozen eggs, and 1 gallon of plain yogurt.
So specific. It's so weirdly specific.
Well, it is because I can only fit 6 gallons in my fridge. I'd buy more, but I have nowhere to put it. It is unsweetened. It's vanilla, but it's unsweetened. 30 calories every 8 ounces, no sugar. Why not whole milk? Because of the calories and the carbs.
It's just a little American psycho to me when you put it that way. That's all.
Yeah, no, it 100% is a function of how long it takes for something to go bad and how much of it I can store in my fridge. Yeah. That's it. But anyway, so it's the same thing every time. And like, you know, I get the weird look from the cashier every time too, because it's a you know, unconventional set of things to put on the belt. But so anyway, I was there last weekend and this woman ahead of me was like acting as if there was a gun to her head. And if she didn't go fast enough, a bomb was going to go off. It was really strange. And the cashier kind of snapped at her about it and told her, like, you need to chill. Now, the cashier was not wrong. This woman needed, like in a movie where they tackle the mental patient and then inject something in their arm and they go limp. That woman needed that moment. But I thought about it. I'm like, you know, she could have been calmed down in a way that didn't make her feel terrible. And now this woman is pushing her cart out into the parking lot, doubly annoyed because she just got called out for being, you know, bonkers, when the cashier could have, you know, said like, oh, don't worry about it. We've got all the time in the world, which, I mean, I was waiting behind and I didn't have all the time in the world, but you know what I'm saying?
More like a kindergartner. A teacher, yes. Kindergarten teacher style.
That's right.
Some patience. Yeah.
And I thought if she'd done something like that, which I had time to think because it was taking so long, she goes out into the parking lot more relaxed and her next few hours are that much better. Now she's probably doubly on edge and her next few hours are that much worse. And all it is the cashier at the store choosing to push one button instead of the other. Mm-hmm. In this this turns into hours and who knows how many people. You know, the exponential effect that happens here gets insane fast.
Well, it's the butterfly effect, which I think somebody mentioned in the chat earlier. There's that bit of it as well. That's really what you're talking about here.
Yeah, so you get these massive existential moments where somebody's loss can just cause absolute chaos in an otherwise tight-knit, happy family, successful family, like you described with intervention. Or you can have the littlest tiny thing where somebody like smiling at you on the street can significantly alter your mood. It can change your day. You know, so there's this spectrum of being that linchpin in a person's existence to be, you know, all the way to being just doing a little tiny bit. And there is no reason at all that you can't be everything on that spectrum a fair amount of the time. The only thing stopping it is really you getting your shit together. There's no other way to put it. You know, it's really hard to be all those things sustainably when you yourself are, you know, mired in trouble.
One thing I wanted to ask you about this, because I think it has to be asked, is how much, you know, responsibility, and this, the more I thought about it, the more ridiculous it sounds, but it's a real thing, is that, you know, how much responsibility, if you are going to drag all those people up the hill with you, do you then have to teach someone in that group to carry the reins when you fall, when you're gone? Because the scenario in the interview, I mean, I don't know the guy, I don't know the family, it was just a TV show that I watched. So I don't know the inner workings of exactly how it all played out. All I know were the result. The results were that this one guy died who basically gave them all a great life. And then when he was gone, all of their lives turned terrible and miserable. does that guy bear a responsibility that they were too dependent, perhaps, on him, you know? And when he was gone, they all fell apart. To what degree is that his fault? Like that,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there's a side of this where it's like, okay, there is also a downside here that's possible to, you know, being the lighthouse for everyone. And then the lights go out and everybody's in the dark.
Yeah, because you never taught them to have the night vision or to know their surroundings. Like, you know, there are certain places you can navigate in the dark, you know, to get up to go to the bathroom in your own house. You know, you don't jam your toe every time because you're familiar with it. But no, that's a huge topic. That's its own episode where it's like, how much hand holding should you do? How much guidance should you give? And when do you, you know, take the training wheels off? And then when do you let go of the handlebars and then just hope it works out for your kid on the bike? You know, you hope the scrapes aren't too bad. That is a massive issue on creative, which is why I absolutely want to talk about that at some point. We've talked about delegating stuff, giving up control on things like, you know, the YouTuber who edits their own videos and does all of that. Yeah, well, because it's hard to get the result they want if somebody isn't properly, you know, set to do it. And we know, you and I know how hard that is to develop somebody into it. It takes a great deal on our end and on the other end. Everybody can be 100% bought into the process and have their head in the right place. And it's still a hard thing. You know, Dan the Latch is in the chat. I've been working on some research stuff with him recently, and it took us literally 25 hours to start to crack the nut and figure out how to do it. And it's not because either of us was resistant. Neither of us made it harder than it needed to be. It just, this is the process, you know? And so it's such an inexact science that when you talk about people, you can overdo it and underdo it when it comes to stuff like kids, and you never know which one you were or if you got it right until something kind of tests them and you see whether it worked or it didn't, where you see them doing, you know, stuff with their own kids. And, you know, now this is, it's a crazy kind of untangleable phenomenon to me.
Yeah. And it does, you know, I didn't mean to undermine my own point of this whole thing, which is like, you know, you can have so much positive effect that you don't even recognize it on other people around you. And then at the same time, be like, and then it could go horribly wrong at the same, you know, afterwards. But that is part of the story. That is part of, mm-hmm. you know, the reality of this stuff happening. So yeah, it is complex.
I'm fascinated by it. I'm fascinated by it in all respects. You know, we talked about football last week. This happens in football, where how much stock do you put in one person and how much do you build a system where you can replace that person? It is, it's everything. It seriously is. I'm trying not to make it like this. You throw your hands up because it's so complex, but like even in a personal relationship, how you have to find a blend when you're in a relationship with somebody between what is how much of you is that relationship and how much kind of independence do you have? And most everybody needs it a kind of different balance and to find somebody else who's compatible with that balance and who gets what they need from that balance. It's really difficult to do. But, you know, some people, you know, I know couples who are wildly successful as couples who are very, they kind of exist together. They exist in a slightly parallel fashion, and that's it. And I know couples who do well spending literally every minute of the available time with them, with each other, and they're both happy, and everything in between can work. So it's like, what level of tight fit and loose fit is the right one there? You know, and it's the same with a parent situation. It's the same with a management situation. How much oversight do you have with your employees versus how much do you let them do their thing? You know, Google got famous having that. What was it like? 20% of time is your own to do whatever.
Some other. I mean, not with whatever, but you could define a different project outside of essentially what you were assigned to do, with 20% of your time. Yeah. So basically one day a week, you were working on something that you're personally really interested in developing.
Right. It's the same concept. It's the same concept because you don't want things to go off the rails. You don't want your employees to burn out and everybody quits and you've got crazy turnover and you're in a constant cycle of just hiring new people instead of cultivating your talent. No, that's not any different than the intervention family. You know, you've got a situation where everybody goes off the rails, you know, and you want to find out how to be that person who gets the best out of everybody and who can, you know, be depended on whatever the right function is here. You know, and it's like, how tight, how loose? Because you want that result where you are that for somebody else. And you're not swinging into the realm of harm, whether you're actively causing harm or you're creating conditions where that person can harm themselves, which is, you know, that's the absent situation in the intervention example, where all of a sudden it sounded to me, I didn't watch the episode, but it sounded like now that the conditions were different, these people lived in such a way that they largely harmed themselves.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the analogy I kept thinking of, like, as we're talking about it was almost like this guy had a hot air balloon and he was carrying everybody up, 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 up. And then his hot air balloon burst and they all fell and they fell from a great height.
It can be as simple as like on that family side, it really is as simple as when, for example, the mom, the grandmother, the grandfather, whatever is gone. Well, everybody always every year had Thanksgiving at their house now because they were, you know, at the top of the pyramid. Now they're gone. Whose house are we going to have it at? Who's going to cook? Are we going to rotate this every year? if you're married and you went to your own parents' house for Thanksgiving, now is the new tradition you go to your in-laws for Thanksgiving? I'm using a hyper-specific example, but all of a sudden the conditions have changed such that it's a lot more complex. And when people start to figure these things out, it can really strain relationships. So I have a feeling in the situation you talked about that this guy was kind of the decision maker.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Well, and this was the Godfather situation too, where somebody's got to make the decisions. How are we going to do that now? Is somebody going to kind of rise to the top? Are the ones who aren't that person going to accept that? This was the best part of Succession, is the internal dynamics of the second generation. With not only what are we going to do, but if it's not me, am I okay with my brother and my sister doing it? This gets out of control very, very quickly. When you watch shows like, you know, we love The Prophet with Marcus Lemonis. I don't think that's still on, is it? Kitchen Nightmares is back again, which is awesome. I've been watching it on Hulu. This is a common theme in these businesses, is that this was thriving when, you know, Papa Frank was, you know, making the meatballs and he put 45 years into it. And now, you know, little Tito is taking over. this is the one moment where we really miss having a video podcast. Kevin is expiring. Half a can of Coke just went into his lungs.
It came out of my nose. I just didn't know what names you were going to choose and what the food
was.
Well,
I didn't either until I...
I know you didn't. That's what made it funnier, was as it just like continually just fell out of your mouth. And I didn't know what would fall out next. It just made it that much funnier.
These restaurants and businesses are in the point where, or at the point where they need, you know, Gordon Ramsay to come in precisely because they can't figure this problem out. You know, it's been run into the ground because that original person isn't doing it anymore. And for one reason or another, the kids are not equipped to maintain that business. And some of them don't really want to, and they're only doing it out of obligation. you get this crazy like kaleidoscope of motivations here, which is what makes all of those shows so intriguing. You know, but what do you do? What do you do? And they never thought it would be that hard for them until that person was gone.
It's so hard for them. That's what those, I'm glad you brought up Kitchen Nightmares, because that is such a great example of this. Because Papa Frank and his meatballs are gone. And then you have these, mm-hmm. Two, three, four siblings or whatever you would think would be able to just keep this ship running, and they can't.
They've got the recipe. The ship is already moving. All they have to do is come in and just start making the meatballs. And I think his name is Franco, by the way. They just call him Frank. You know, he anglicized his parents. Franco's parents were immigrants from Italy. Mm-hmm. And he was named Franco. But, at school, they just called him Frank, and that stuck. And this is part of the story. This is part of the process. It looks like it's a turnkey thing. Personnel changes a little bit, and that's that. But everything is substantially the same. And it is. Nothing has changed except Frank, who's now retired. Let's say he's not passed, but it's like finally time for him to retire. So he's hung up his apron.
And he was just the magic person that made that thing successful. And that's the concept here, is that the world is full of these magic people. And I don't know. I think it goes kind of largely ignored. It's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there are situations too. Benjamin James is talking in the chat here about it's kind of bad leadership if it can't run without you. And I think in a lot of those situations, like, that's clear to look at a business that's failing and say, yeah, this got done wrong. It's not always clear to draw that same conclusion in a family situation, or to even recognize that you're at the country club with your family every Sunday precisely because somebody is doing a great job with leadership. you can't figure these things out very well. But sometimes it is really hard to replicate. And we've talked about this with YouTube stuff. I've been dealing with it with writing. I've been working with somebody for about a month on how do you train a good writer to write videos, which is a super weird thing and not really like anything else. It's not even like writing other visual things. It's not like writing a play. It's not like writing a movie. It's completely different on YouTube. Can you replicate that? And some things you can, and some things they seem impossible. If they can be replicated, I haven't figured them out. Tap being able to identify a spot to tap a specific emotion. I don't know how you put somebody else in a position to recognize that thing, because it's not explicit. It's just something that you know how to do from, a great deal of experience, and they don't have the experience yet to seize on that thing. So there's this big question of, is it even possible to do it right? And I think a lot of parents are in a bad spot because, man, some people are just difficult, and some people do what they do. And it doesn't matter how great that parent is, what resources they provide, people are people.
Yeah, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink, that sort of thing. I mean, that's certainly part of this, right? And when I was saying earlier, like, how much is that person to blame? The flip side, or the other question is, well, what's wrong with all of the other people? The people who none of them could figure it out? Like, none of them with such a great mentor? Or such a great mentor might be the wrong word, because that would require some sort of direct mentorship. But just an example, say.
It's indirect mentorship.
Yeah, right. An example to look toward to say, hey, this is the way, you wake up at this time every day and you do this sort of thing and you take care of these people this way and you let this thing slide because, maybe down the road, burning that bridge today will be a bad thing because maybe you'll need them later. I don't know, whatever all those like little tiny life lessons are. You know what I mean? Where it's like, tip this delivery guy because, there may come a time where that will pay off in a lot more ways than you can recognize today. Those type of little things that add up to create a person. And then the next person doesn't do those little things and everything is bad.
Everything you just described too, 100% depends on the receiving person receiving it.
Yeah, right.
You know, and I think it's much more grim even than, you know, you lead the horse to water and you can't make it drink. Well, that's true. But sometimes you can't stop the horse from jumping into the water and drowning itself.
Yeah, right.
Like that is quite impossible sometimes. And, you know, you mentioned intervention. There's only so much that a family can do for somebody who is, you know, mired in addiction, for example, because they're just simply forces at play that the people in that person's life cannot influence directly. It's not possible. It's impossible. You know, and sometimes it's people just doing what they want to do, you know, and that happens, you know, with the work stuff. You know, we've done a really good job. I'm comfortable celebrating us with this, finding people to work with who do the right blend of that. So, for example, we've worked with John Swan on editing for a long time. He's very good and he's a very good fit because he goes rogue appropriately. He will put his own touches into things and identify spots that, you know, for example, you have an emotional buildup and he'll use music that makes that happen where we didn't see it until he edited it that way. And what he doesn't do is say like, yeah, I cut this 90 seconds because I thought it sucked. Like, right. We never have to deal with that right. With him. We don't have to go back and forth on anything. You know, but that is the real process with a lot of people you work with, where they do it the way they think it should be done, and there's less flexibility. You know, it fits everything. You know, you get this with quarterbacks where some of them follow a play that's called to the letter, sometimes for good, and other times they shouldn't have, and they did it anyway and got a crummy result. Others go rogue all the time. They go rogue, and a coach might be comfortable with that. You know, we mentioned the Bills, the quarterback for the Bills, Josh Allen, goes rogue all the time, and the coach lives with it because he thinks the benefits outweigh the negatives.
He's a pretty good rogue.
He's a good rogue. It works out. But there are other coaches who would be driven to insanity by that level of autonomy happening. So you have to find the blend on all of this stuff. What I do feel is the only certain thing about all of this is that you have 1,000 opportunities every single day to influence the odds of a better outcome on tiny things and significant things. You don't have the control. You can't make the horse drink. Most of the time, you can't actually, you know, draw a straight line between A and B. But you can influence the odds. That cashier could have been the perfectly sweet, you know, responder that put that woman in a position to have a better mood and to relax. And she still doesn't anyway. Well, what can you do? You did your part. You go from there. All you can do is all you can do. Mm-hmm. But you still keep doing it. And you do it at every available opportunity. And I think that, you know, over time, you will find how valuable you are to other people.
Yeah. All right. So that is what I've been thinking about lately. It definitely went a lot deeper and all over the place than I thought it would, but that's a good thing. And that is what I hoped for. So yeah, what is the hero's journey? I don't know, but you know, Sephiroth's not real. So you can slay him in Final Fantasy VII, but in real life, it might be making a meatball. And if your name is Franco. All right.
Well, little Tito needs to figure it out.
Little Tito.
Or little Tito's wife is going to leave him. Mm. His kids are going to resent him. He's going to go bankrupt.
Little Tito.
He's going to be on the next episode of Intervention.
Unless he becomes Big Tito.
That's right. That's right.
All right. If you want to support the podcast, please go to patreon.com/thecreateunknown. We will be back next week. Until then, see you, Space Cowboys.
Thanks for listening to The Create Unknown. We make this show with the support of our patrons. 100% of that goes directly to keeping episodes going every week, and the recent support has been amazing. Sidpoke, NRM, Venture Addicts, Weezer Good, you all really do make this show happen. Thank you to the Tots and Dumpster crew, old and new, who save tiny little lives every month. Thank you to our grizzled, battle-hardened child infantry. Clemente De Los Santos, Dan the Latch, Demetrius Andrews, Erica Farrakhan, Jen Mefasanti, Kevin Menard, Mikhail Steinke, Monahim, Natsu, Penny Peddler, Risebread, Ryan Kinder, Samuel Manser, Sean S., Sean Malone, and Tom Vidioger. And a tremendous shout out to our elite baby gang commanders. Atrocious Guff, Cat, Dojangles, Graham Robertson, James Gallagher, Jeff Davis, Orange Vanilla Coke, Patrick Pister, TCU's personal pilot, Andy, Ryan Carroll, Baseweight, Vintos, Yetis Deletus, Jonas Walter, Nathan Robinson, Jelxies, and of course, Trevstead. You are the elite. Thank you as well to our indentured servants, producer-editor Ben Webster, Minecraft mogul Laterman, Discord kitten wrangler Conrad, and producer emeritus Dan Yoshua. Thanks to Baseweight for use of Created in the Unknown for the opening theme. Thanks to Electro Voice for giving us mics to sound good on top of it. And a special thanks to Main Gear for powering all of our PC endeavors. The Create Unknown is an Unknown Media production in partnership with Studio 71.